Welcome, everyone, to this beautiful day of December 30th, 2012. It will be our last blessing of the great year of 2012 and an invocation of the great new year awaiting us. And I would really like to see a lot of sharing on the call today. I have my own messages to share, but I'd like to share them in the woven tapestry of what others of you see, need, want, desire, and anticipate as a big factor in the year to come. So I do have the Q&A mode on, and the way you enter it is with star 6, then you press 1. And we have a caller already on the line from area code 321. You're on.
Hey, Glenda, it's Scott from Orlando.
Oh, hi, Scott.
Hey, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind speaking to moving from out of my head a little bit and more into my heart, because I live a lot in my head. I love thinking about all the things, you know, the intelligence in the heart, you know, expansion and compression and the rights and freedoms and da-da-da all day long. I think about all that stuff. But mm-hmm. I want to develop, I noticed when I get to chat with some other blessing, with some blessing givers sometimes, that, they have more of a gift of living in their heart, and that's where I want to grow. I guess I'm speaking to that intuition you said, I guess.
Right. Well, Scott, that's actually a wonderful question, and I imagine it's a question a lot of people have, but don't dare to voice. So, just a minute, let me take a drink. I want to make sure I've got a good voice for it, because this is a very important response. Both your mind, that is your biological mind, actually, let's say your mind has about 3 or 4 rings of power. The one most people refer to when they say they're in their head is they're really referring to the biological mind. However, that mind also involves the data that's been brought in through biological intelligence through our cells. We're learning more and more that our cells actually communicate and that we have a matrix of intelligence through the cells of our body. An interesting article I was reading lately was expressing the fact that the bacteria in our body also have a communication system, and that is focused in another brain we could refer to as our gut brain, which literally lives in our small and large intestines. And it focuses around the intelligence of the bacteria, which is central to not only our digestion, but also our immune system, and that our immune system is actually triggered by these communications from our gut and then activated through the endocrine system and through the white blood cell count that flows through our veins. So there are different kinds of mental centers. There's our autonomic nervous system, which actually responds instinctively to the environment and whatever's happening in the environment. Then there's a larger mind that brings to every life the memories of all you've been and ever been. And then a larger mind than that, which connects with the universe, the whole of the human community and nature. So we've got different rings of fire, you might say, each one of them having their level of intelligence. Now, when we are focusing upon a particular level of intelligence, I don't think it's inappropriate to be centered there cognitively and intuitively. For example, if we want to ask our body something about what's going on, I think it's a very appropriate thing just to relax and actually ask your body, I don't feel well. You've been really droopy lately. What's going on? And then listen. That's appropriate. It's appropriate to use your analytical data processing mind, which is mostly in your brain, when that's what the subject of intelligence is. And so let's begin by honoring the different levels of intelligence, the different integration points of our various minds that get larger and larger and larger. But frankly, Scott, I don't think that's the trouble you're having. I think you probably already do that because you're a very evolved, enlightened man. And learning to deal with these different focal points of intelligence is part of what we learn on the road to enlightenment. What you're really confronting is a different subject, okay? And that subject is the heart versus thinking. Is that pretty much what we're looking at?
Yeah, I want to be able to grow in, you know, being practical, stable, viable, useful, meaningful, joyful, free, etc.
Yeah.
And actually feeling the experience.
Exactly. Well, now the heart is actually your original focus of intelligence. When you were conceived and in the early days of the womb, the heart was the whole of your intelligence. And your heart responded instinctively and through feeling to everything around it. And today, as a man, your heart functions as the intuitive, emotional, responding, and responsible center that coordinates all the other localities of intelligence from a pathway of compassion, so that you feel not just for yourself, but you can feel along with and for others. And maybe not at the level that Christ was compassionate, but you have empathy. You can feel what another person feels because you've been in that situation. But now, I think you're also a very thinking person based on how you phrased your question. And that may be what's causing you the problem, because here's what you will – I think you're already growing in your heart, but your thoughts are interfering with it.
I feel pretty much supported, yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing about thoughts. Is thoughts really don't belong to us. They flow through us like wind blows through our house if we open the windows. Thoughts actually belong to the whole field of consciousness. And we can become very addicted to thinking because of times when we needed lots of input from the environment or from the universe. And we'd open up all the doors and windows and we would think, and we'd say, okay, God, send me the answer. Think. Well, the pathway to an enlightened life is to realize that your thoughts still belong to you. They don't even originate in you. They flow through you, and I'll give you a way to prove that to yourself, because I know that when you were a little boy, you thought about very different things. You might think about baseball, fishing, just chumming around with the boys, whatever you guys did, or acing your sixth grade test, you know, to be able to pass on to the next grade. And you notice when school was out, I don't know when it was in your generation, but probably in May, school was out. And the last thing you wanted to do for at least a few weeks was think. Do you remember that?
I remember summer being, yeah, exciting.
Yeah, you just wanted to be out, swim, throw the ball, bike, whatever you did. You didn't want to think. Because those thoughts didn't belong to you. They were being force-fed to you for 9 months of the year. And the last thing you wanted to do when school was out was go think. You remember?
Yes.
Okay. Now hold on to that realization, because that in itself is a key to how you can simply get back to the heart. Okay. The heart just simply takes over. It is the prime coordinator of your life. So what you do to make the shift is you just set aside times in the day when you don't think. And don't assume that it is a survival necessity to think. It isn't. At times you may need data from the universe. You may need to go online, do a Google search, read a book or whatever to get information you need. Sometimes you need to talk to your accountant and figure out a better budget. So, but then you're getting, you know, what's in your bank book is not internal to you. It's something you're going to play with to figure out the best income strategy, the best budget, and it's called income because it comes from outside you. Right? Well, in many ways, thoughts are a kind of income. Think of income. That's thoughts. They don't originate from inside you. And this will be an epiphany when you discover that. What originates from inside you is coordination, integration. Thus, we talk about integrity as a hallmark of personal evolution, personal growth, and personal enlightenment. So integration originates inside you. Integration is what determines how you want to make your living for a higher purpose, for a purpose that's at least meaningful to your life.
That how would you obtain higher purpose in obtaining, you know, goals of some kind?
Goals of any kind.
Yeah.
Goals that mean something to you. Having the right job that you enjoy going to. So the integration inside you is what selects the purpose, the reason for doing what you do, and the way you do it, and perhaps the values and the standards and the principles by which you do it. But the income that keeps it going comes from outside you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, somewhere along the line in life, partly because of the beta function of our mind, we begin to associate monetary income with other forms of income, like we need a pat on the back, we need positive reinforcement, we need a happy face around us, we need, well, we get needy. We get needy, and so we begin to associate our needs with who we are, and it's actually not true. An enlightened person is someone who can recognize their needs as being essentially external, because even our need for food is because we are exceeding our internal capacity for processing stored nutrients that are already in our body. In other words, we want to go be able to run a mile. Therefore, we better eat some spaghetti. So even our eating, even some of our emotional needs stem from the fact that we want to be better endowed for handling an external experience. This is part of our exchange with the outside world, with the external world. Well, thoughts are the, I would say, the basic fuel for taking us into that external world. We flow them in, and thoughts tell us what we need and what we need to do in order to be better adapted or successful in the external world. So the heart, by comparison, is that center of your being which takes all your whole life of experience, not just feeling. It could be analytical experience. It could be data experience. It could be times you were hurt and you don't want to do that again. It could be everything. But it takes a different viewpoint. The heart is looking at everything you've experienced, everything you've acquired, everything you are, and takes a look at how this can serve me better and how I can use it to serve others and how it works with my purpose, my goals, and my principles. So, in other words, it's not what you need to income. It's what you want to integrate that's already here for purposes of then sharing with others. So if we talked about it purely in terms of energetic flow, thoughts are that which we take in. And it's good. It's good to take them in. Very, very powerful intuitives and psychics are able to take in thoughts from far away, even from other dimensions of time and space, like Nostradamus, so that he could actually see what would be happening centuries down the road. But he was still taking those thoughts in from other dimensions. So now what goes wrong is when we identify with things that are external to us, and that's what's causing you problems, Scott.
Okay.
Now, the thoughts themselves are good. An intelligent person knows how to think the right thoughts, to use thoughts constructively and productively, and how to find information that you need. But an enlightened person knows how to do that and not identify with the thoughts.
Okay?
So we become needy of them, and we become attached to them and unable to stop them when we identify with them. You can't stop what you identify with. This is a core understanding of anyone who's ever dealt with addictive behavior, any type of addictive behavior, is you can't change what you identify with. You have to first disidentify with something in order to step back, look at it, and say, okay, well, this may or may not be a good thing to do, but at least now I can really look at it and make some decisions.
Something made me feel really good that you said about the master. You said he was a perfect gentleman, and that made me feel so good, and I want to be able to be like that, you know, growing that way.
I think you're well on your way, Scott, I really do. And it will help you. Actually, there's a valid point to objectifying our perceptions before we act upon them. Sometimes we can speak too quickly. Solomon said a man who pauses before he speaks is a man of wisdom. And you know what that pause is all about? It allows you to disidentify just enough with what you were going to say, that you can also include the other person's viewpoint. And that's very much a part of being a wise man and a gentleman. So I think you're going to find that when I wrap up my, I guess I've already talked quite a bit, but when I get to where I wrap up what I wanted to say today, what I said to you, Scott, is going to apply a great deal. So thank you. It was a good question, and I know it's helped a lot of people. We have two other callers on the line. We have someone from area code. Well, I think it's 642.
Hi, I think that's me, Glenda. Linda.
Oh, hi, Linda.
Look, wow, there was so much in what you just said. I think I'll have to listen to that quite a few more times to integrate it all, because it was very powerful, but a lot of information also. But thank you for that. So part of that might have addressed this question coming up. But here in New Zealand, tonight's New Year's Eve, so obviously it's a time of a lot of people looking at resolutions, and myself looking at wanting to what to purge, what's released. And also for next year, looking at, you know, your resolutions and what you desire. And what I wanted to ask you about is, if you want something, like you desire something, maybe finding your joy or your service or relationships, what I don't understand is I get confused about sort of that vacuum and creating a vacuum. So if I desire something, am I, in fact, creating a vacuum just to repeat the cycles that have already been happening? Can you explain a little bit about my confusion around that?
Well, first of all, I have to express my confusion. Where did you get the idea you have to create a vacuum in order to desire something?
Well, I don't know. I guess this morning I was trying to revisit Love Without End, and there was something in there about cycles, but not creating a vacuum, because when you create a vacuum, you recreate patterns. So I was just trying to get my understanding around that, and there, I guess, is where my confusion was.
Well, I don't think Yeshua said anything along the lines of your confusion. He did talk about a vacuum in two ways. One is that the universe abhors a vacuum, therefore it will fill it. And if we remove what we've been doing, things that didn't work, let's say, but we don't have plans for what to do next, the universe will tend to fill that vacuum with the same thing you've been doing. And that's what accounts for repeated cycles. But now there's something that resembles a vacuum. It really isn't. It's actually the space between spaces, which is quantum space, where there is no time and space. And these are the places we go to in our deep sleep, and also we go to in our deep meditation times. This is the Holy of Holies, because there is no time and space. And sometimes we can enter those areas of what might be called all potential and examine other possibilities for the way we've been doing things. And we can extract from what you might call a vacuum. It's really not a vacuum. It's a very potent place from which the whole universe was created. And actually the whole universe, even now, the spaces between the spaces, we are almost 99% non-solid. What connects everything from the desk that may be in front of you to the chair you're sitting on to the telephone you're holding is an energetic matrix. And it's that energetic matrix that makes it feel solid. It really isn't. There are spaces between spaces between spaces. And these are the spaces that are being charted by the most advanced quantum physicists today, because they know it's the answer to being able to move not only forward but backward and sideways and interdimensionally in this field called time and space. I received an interesting article from one of our blessing givers about a month ago, and it's using modern technology in a fascinating way, because it was about someone who has learned how to hack, you know, as in hacking computer systems, learned how to hack the matrix of the human protective field that comes into play after a person has been burned. And actually he learned that it's the field that designed to protect that actually sustains and causes us to go through the whole healing process of a burn. But by hacking that field and suspending that protective field, he can enter it, and with a few suggestive remarks or prayers or blessings. I need to learn more about this person before I share in more depth, but I think it works a great deal like our blessing works. By hacking that protective field, people even with major, massive burns that have taken them to the emergency room are just spontaneously healed. Now, the strange thing is it was the protective field that was actually perpetuating the burn and causing the burn to have to go through all the ordinary cycles of healing, usually resulting in deep scar tissue, if not permanent loss of some tissue. And what an irony. I accidentally hacked that field once when I was splashed by hot oil that I was using to deep fry some food. I dumped too much food in it, and a whole lot of the oil splashed back on my arm, and I went into a kind of altered space, and I just looked at it with great admiration, not even acknowledging that that was hot oil, grabbed a cloth, wiped it off. It never even turned pink. But the food I had put in to the tureen was quickly browning and frying. So I do know from personal experience that a lot of these connective energetic fields have a kind of self-perpetuating energy. They want to survive just as much as the frogs and the trees and you and I. And so these energetic fields will perpetuate whatever was entrusted into their keeping. So that's a little, that's I think what he's talking about. So you need to have a new plan. It's very important to have a new plan before you fully let go of the old one. And that's what I want to talk about. I'm not going to be able to take our last call, unfortunately, because I need to wrap up what we've been saying today. I see this new year as being a year of recovery. Not running the marathon, not getting back, you know, into high-paced, stressful living by any means. Now is the time when we have learned the importance of letting go, when we've learned to trust, when we've learned that, well, even if the worst happens, it's not so bad, we're still here. And we have an opportunity now to continue that process. I would say for the last 4 years, most people have been in a state of dread. Ever since the extreme dip in economy in 2008 to other things that have been happening in the world, different things collapsing around us, dear friends and loved ones departing, companies folding, ideas being proven to be bogus, all kinds of challenges to revered beliefs and thoughts. And we've been in a state of dread. Well, what next? What next? And then with the imminent arrival of the solstice of 2012, we were in deep fear of, well, how much more do we have to confront? How much more do we have to let go? Okay, well, that day has come and gone, and we're all here. It was a blissful, graceful day that I think restored a spirit of optimism to the world. Now, this doesn't mean that we won't continue to let go of some things that don't work. We still have to examine those things that don't work. But we're going to do it differently this year. This year, we're going to first form what we would rather have instead of being hit blindsided by what we have to let go of that we weren't prepared to let go of. We're going to think about more, well, what would be the ideal situation? If I could grow in any particular direction, what would it be? It's kind of like this. Let's compare the last 4 years to a growing serious illness that finally crashed in the fall of 2012, and then we had to undergo surgery. Now, we made it through the surgery, and we're in recovery, and the doctor's report is completely optimistic. He says, you're going to make it, but you've got to not repeat what you did before. You've got to form some better habits. So what we're going to do now in our recovery phase is we're not going to go out and get on our bicycle and bike 10 miles a day. No, that's not it right now. Not right now, we will. But right now, we're going to start thinking about, okay, what was wrong in my diet? And I don't mean just nutritional diet. I mean my diet of everything, what I did daily, how I spent my time, what did I think about, what did I engage in. We're going to be looking at that to repair our lifestyle diet. And then we're going to start having maybe a little more moderate diet, but more quality. Everything we spend our time on, our effort that we take into ourselves has to be more quality. And we have the faith that in being in that greater state of quality, we will be nourished. And every day we'll get up, we'll stretch our muscles a little bit more, we'll stretch our imagination a little more, and while we're in this resting mode of winter, we'll think about, okay, now, I don't want to do a do-over. We won't think about do-overs. We won't say, well, if I had it all to do over, what would I do? No, there are no do-overs. Now you're in this peaceful state of recovery where you have the whole world in front of you and your doctor has just laid it flat on you and said, no more of that, no more of that, no more of that. But you have a very good prognosis. Okay, well, what do I want to do now? What is it? I'm open. God, show me the plan. Help me form the plan I want. What experiences do I want to really be having? How do I want to feel about life? How do I want to feel when I get up in the morning? What friends mean the most to me? And what friends can I say, thank you for being with me in my life, but I wish you well, but we don't have that much in common, really. You know, I need to just be over here, take care of myself, and create a new future. Some of you may want to actually move, literally move your location. Some of you may want to change jobs. Some of you may want to look at new inventions and innovations that hold a promising future. And now, you won't just jump into them and put your whole savings into them, but you might buy a CD and start learning about them, reading about them. See, this is what I mean by recovery. Now, an interesting thing about recovery is recovery often has a healing crisis buried in it. And those of you who are health caregivers know this very, very well. And so what that healing crisis comes from is the fact that everything that caused us to get sick before we got sick has a pattern of duration that wants to continue for a while until it plays itself out. It's like a dog that has 15 barks bottled up inside. And after 4 barks, you say, that's enough, Fido. And so under its breath, it goes, woof, 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 woof. It counts out the barks it's still got planned. It's sort of like once we have an old plan, it wants to play itself out. Now, sometimes if it's an old plan that had problems, it will play itself out negatively. On a physical level, that could mean needing to detox. On a relationship level, it could mean the worst has not yet happened. It may mean the final confrontation. It could mean with a job, finally looking at, this job is not for me. It got my kids through college. It got the house paid for. But it's not nourishing me. And I don't even particularly like the people I work with. And so the healing crisis brings the final confrontation. In the overall economy, we haven't seen the worst yet in fiscal crisis, but I'm just talking about fiscal economy. And there are two levels of actually there are many levels of economy. The first level of economy is hope, the hope we have that causes us to create a better future. This is what the pilgrims had when they came to America. They had no money of any value. Maybe they had a few coins, but they were not in an economic system, so it hardly mattered. What they had was hope and community and a willingness to create the future they wanted. So actually, hope is the first line of economy. Willingness to create is the second level of economy. Production and willingness to exchange and form a community around what we believe in is the third level of economy. These levels of economy will actually be improving this year and growing. But the fiscal economy, that is the byproduct of many bad decisions for several years in the past, may keep going off a cliff, and I don't mean that to be a bad pun. But we are going to have to still face some things there. But just because the fiscal economy is still going to be in a state of challenge, don't think the larger economy is in trouble. The larger economy is turning around. And here's what you might compare it to. Before you can have rain, you first have to accumulate humidity in high places. You first of all got to draw humidity up into the clouds, and then the clouds have to condense it before they can drop it to the earth. Okay. The earth may still be in a bit of a drought for a while. The land may crack. And we may think, wow, what are we going to do about this? But if you just look up, you're going to see the clouds accumulating. You're going to see condensation occurring. You're going to see little rainbows in the clouds, which means up in the clouds, rain condensation is refracting light. And it's just a matter of time till it starts sprinkling and then dumping rain onto the earth. So that's what I mean by this year being a recovery year, where we're going to see a little bit more of the worst, but overall a great prognosis, overall great healing, more hope. And so my recommendation to all of you is to focus on the positive, keep your hope high, open your heart to the highest and best, and disregard these healing crises around us unless they impinge upon you. And if they do, resolve them with the most expediency you can. Don't prolong them, because that's all they are. They're just healing crises. They're the last gasp of something that's been wrong for a long time. And that's all they are. So address them with compassion or resolution or definitive completion. Deal with them. Let go of them. Move on. But don't move into dramas about them. The best is yet to come. If we handle our recovery year really, really well, the next year will be our getting well year. And we're going to feel so much better. But the difference between recovery and what we were going through last year is last year we were going through high impact changes that were frightening, that we didn't have answers for, that hadn't turned the corner yet. We've turned the corner now. We can see light at the end of the tunnel. And now our attention can be facing hope and a sunrise, and we can, well, we've turned the corner. Now, that's my prophecy for the year, and it's been a very well-guided prophecy in my prayers and meditations with Yeshua. And I think you'll see that it affects all of us worldwide. I'm not just speaking for the United States. When Yeshua speaks, he speaks for all mankind. And you'll find that different countries recover in different ways for different reasons at different rates of change. Some still have to confront social problems. Some still have to confront environmental problems and so on. Some still have to confront military horrors. Some still confront poverty. The issues will be different country to country. But the light at the end of the tunnel will be something that we can actually share with one another and communicate with one another so that we become stronger. This is the year in which we become stronger. And those are the words I want to leave you with as we move into our blessing. Shoes and socks off, and be comfortably seated in your be comfortably seated in your chair with your head pointed toward heaven, and allow your attention to fall into your heart. And pray from your heart. And just to address this a little bit more in depth, don't think about your prayer and then pray it. Allow your heart to just overspill the desires, the needs, the hopes, the dreams. And don't hold anything back. Allow your heart to pray its most magnificent dream. Whatever it is, nothing is impossible for God. And believe that your prayer will be answered. But learning to trust and believe may be part of the key growth factor of this year. So it's okay if you have a little bit of reservation. Just know that that reservation will begin to fade day by day. as we move into greater optimism this year. I would ask that you be in your heart now, hear my prayer to Yeshua, and then pray your prayer for 3 minutes as I convey the energetic blessing along with any blessing givers who would like to join me. Dear Yeshua, thank you for bringing us to the threshold of a new year and bringing us to face our hope, to let our fears subside, to face our challenges with courage, knowing that we are being given the strength, the optimism, the imagination, the insight, and the delight to be greater than any challenge that faces us, and to see the positive resolution on the other side of its existence. We so thank you for being here with us, giving us this positive focus. We thank you for healing us, giving us hope, comforting those who are ill, alone, cheering the children, and being with all of us as human beings, that we may know that as a greater soul, we are larger than any challenge we may ever face. And thank you most of all for your love. Amen. Amen. Your blessing is complete. The energy has been given to you. Now go and assimilate by resting for at least 7 minutes. And in that time of rest, don't think. Remember, thoughts are external to you. Just be and allow your body, heart, and soul to assimilate into all of its many centers of life that which has been given to you, that it may bring you into the highest and the best for healing and recovery, for now and for the whole of this year and forever.